Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. How does crime, or even awareness of crime, impact on children? What can they possibly understand about motives or intent? Today's story is Divine Intervention by Louise Connor, Scarlet Stiletto Third Prize 1995. Jiminy, it's hot. I've got the whole oval to cross. I'm going to get to Mum's work first. I've just got to beat Petey and Paulie. They know too, but not as much as me. I'm supposed to wait for them after school, but crikey, what can happen to them? It's only a bloody oval on the bridge. I told them old men live under the bridge and wait for you to cross by yourself, and then they drag you under and suck your blood. But I made that up, so it can't be true. They're sooks, Petey and Paulie. I say a rhyme to make the time go faster. It always works. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Once I caught a fish alive. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Then I let it go again. Why did you let it go? Because it bit my finger so. Which finger did it bite? This little pinky on my right. Oh, I'm only a millionth, a trillionth, a gillionth of the way there. I say it 10 more times and run as fast as I can while I'm trying to say it. I'm nearly there, so I count pink elephants. Each pink elephant takes 1 second to say. Longer if you say it really, really, really slowly. I'm up to 20 pink elephants. I can't run anymore. So I walk fast. I've got to save my breath to get across the bridge, then round past the flats, then 5 pink elephants and I'm at the shops. I'm up the stairs and along the corridor past Dr. Baum's surgery, then in the door to Mum's salon. Mrs. McDermott's there having her blow dry. Once I called it a blow job by mistake and Dad laughed, but Mum rousted him and told me to forget it. I haven't though. And one day I'll find out what the joke is. Mum's up to the teasing bit. She's doing up Mrs. McDermott like Helen Shapiro from Bandstand. What are you doing here so early, Fifi? She says. Where are the boys? I say I couldn't find them. I thought they left already. I was going to drag out telling her, but I can't help myself. It just comes out all in a rush. Miss Stevens dead. Something hit her on the head. Real hard at lunchtime. Geraldine found her. She bawled so much they called the doctor. I wish I was the one who found her. I wouldn't have been a crybaby. The cops are there. Dad too. 10 police cars at least and an ambulance. It must have been murder. Geraldine's at home and her mum won't let me see her. So I don't know all the facts. Oh, I bet there was a lot of blood. But we weren't allowed back in. I couldn't even get my bag. The whole of the school had to go into the church and say Hail Marys. And then we got questioned one by one. Dad asked me, did I see anyone unusual? Well, of course I didn't. I would have said straight away if I had. All the time I'm telling Mum and Mrs. McDiarmid, I don't tell them I know who did it. I didn't tell Dad and I won't tell Mum. They won't believe me and they'll stop me getting the evidence. I'm going to get evidence. He won't get away with this. He'll hang, like Ronald Ryan, even though my family's against capital punishment. Even my dad. He says he doesn't want to ever be responsible for someone dying. And anyway, what if you find out 10 years later that they didn't do it? But Garen Darby will hang for this. I can't be held responsible. He did it, and I know it. My dad's a copper. I'm allowed to call him that, except when his boss comes round. Then he's a police officer. Dad's a detective inspector. That makes him 88th in line for the top job. And he's only young, he says, so you never know. One day he'll be famous and influential. My dad says I'm a bit of a detective myself. I always find the chocolate biscuits every week, wherever he hides them. He gives me clues, but hard ones. And twice now I've found the Christmas presents, once in the ceiling and once in the boot of the car, but I didn't tell anyone. My mum asks heaps of questions. So does Mrs. McDiarmid. If I know the answer, I tell them, and sometimes I have to guess. That's called deduction, and it's all right for a detective to deduce things, as long as you don't do it too much and keep an open mind. But I don't tell them about Garen Darby. That's because I haven't yet got all the facts. I know the motive. That means I know why he did it. Miss Stephen didn't like him anymore. She used to joke round with him a bit at first. She likes me and Leo Maloney and some of the others, but mostly me and Leo. But she had some kids she hated right from the start, and you didn't want to be one of those. And Garen had gone from being a favourite to one of those. He wasn't the sick bucket monitor anymore. That was Eddie Zabinski now, and believe it or not, Garen liked being the sick bucket monitor. He always made a joke out of it to make Miss Stephen laugh. Someone would spew and she'd say, "Go on, Garen, do your stuff." He'd go out and come back with his hanky tied round his face, like a sheriff, and the bucket and mop. Then he'd clean it up and she'd make a bit more of a fuss of him. Sometimes she let him clean her car for money. But then something happened, I'm not sure what, and he wasn't a favourite anymore. You can always tell with Miss Stephen if you're a favourite or not. I'm a favourite, and Miss Stephen especially likes my go-go dancing. Every Friday, just our class has a concert, and Miss Stephen is the judge, and the rest of the class is the audience, and all the kids have to do something. I'm the leader of the go-go dancers, so I get to pick who is in my group. I'm the leader because my sister Sharon is a real go-go dancer with the Union Jack. So is Danila Pada's sister. But my mum makes Sharon and everyone's costumes, so I get to be the boss. Leo Maloney's in charge of the singers. They do, in order of my favourites, "Ferry Across the Mersey" by Herman's Hermits, "Georgie Girl" by The Seekers. They're Australian, in case you don't know. And I like "Que Sera Sera" by Normie Rowe. He's Australian too, but "Que Sera Sera" means something Italian. If Miss Stephen picks your act as the best on the day, you get to do it again. Me and Leo usually get to do it again. We are both top of the class too. Me of the girls and him of the boys. We fight about who is top between us two, but not really. We're equal top most of the time. Last week, Miss Stephen made Garen Darby and Phil Horrigan cry into the tear bottle all play lunch. She roused on them and then they started sooking. "There's a drought, you know," she said, "so we can't have you two turning on the tears and wasting water. Go and get the tear bottles. You're going to be sissies, and then you can at least do something useful. If that's not full when I get back after play lunch, there'll be trouble, she told them. She always makes the boys do that if they cry. She'd forgotten about it after play lunch, though. But Garen didn't. After school, he nicked all her hubcaps. Well, at least that's what Miss Stephen and Sister Dominic said the next day. But Garen Darby stuck to his story and said he didn't, and they couldn't prove it. What I know that nobody else knows is that Garen Darby went inside today at lunchtime. We're not allowed inside, unless it's raining. I only went in myself to get my copy of the Top of the Hit Parade from my bag, because Danila Parda wouldn't believe me when I said the Seekers were number one. My sister gets me a copy every week because she works at the Groove Record Shop every Friday night and Saturday morning. But I couldn't get it because Sister Immaculata was going crook at Garen in the corridor. You're a naughty, disobedient boy, Garen. Now get outside now and I won't tell Sister Dominic this time. You know the penalty for disobedience, don't you? Six of the best with the fluffy duster, she said. Oh, I didn't want that either, so I went outside before she saw me. Garen Darby came out just after me, so he must have killed Miss Stephen before Sister Immaculata caught him in the corridor. I'm going to find out for sure, though, before I tell anyone. I remember the other important bit of information I have for Mum. Sister Dominic says there's no school tomorrow on account of Miss Stephen dying, I tell her. Oh, fiddlesticks, says Mum. Well, what am I supposed to do? You can tell none of those bloody nuns have kids of their own to worry about it. Look, can you do us a favour, Sue, and mind the kids, she says to Mrs. McDiarmid. Today's set is on the house and we'll call it quits. All right, says Mrs. McDiarmid. Send them round in the morning. Oh, there goes today's profits, Mum says. The boys arrive and try to tell Mum about it all over again, but I tell them they're too late. She knows all about it from me. And anyway, I know more than them put together. I give Paulie a Chinese burn because he deserves it. Then Mum gives us some money to buy Coke spiders at Mr. Sheedy's milk bar downstairs, except I buy a lime one. Mum cleans up the place and we all go home together. Dad's there and he tells Mum more, except he makes me go outside so I can't hear. Oh, then it's dinner and a bit of telly, then bed. If Dad's home, he always tucks us in. I've got my own room because I'm the only pint-sized girl in my family. Sharon's got to sleep out in the backyard and the boys share the second biggest bedroom inside after Mum and Dad's. Dad always does me last. He sits on the bed and pulls the blankets right up to my chin. Then we just talk about any old thing. But tonight I have to ask him something. I know he won't tell me anything about the Miss Stephen case, because he always says that we can't ask him about work and we have to respect that. If there's something he needs to tell us, he will, he says, and he does sometimes. We talk for a bit just about anything. He says I'm not to worry too much about what's happened, that everything will be all right in the end. Then I ask him what I need to know. If someone knows someone has murdered someone, should they tell someone, even if they don't know absolutely positively for sure? No, says Dad, they shouldn't tell someone, and they should stop thinking about it and leave it up to the police and go to sleep. I knew he'd say something like that, and it's what I wanted to hear, because that someone is me, and now I don't have to tell anyone anything until I can prove it. I want to be a detective like my dad. But Miss Stephen told Mum once that she reckoned I'd make a good journalist. Fiona has a very vivid imagination, Mrs. Corrigan, and she's very liberal with the truth. She'll make a good journalist one day, she said. I know exactly what she said because I learned it off by heart. So now I'm not sure whether to be a journalist, because that's what Miss Stephen would like, or a detective, which I'm going to be anyway just as soon as I solve this murder for Dad. They'll have to make me an honorary one, like they did to Cubby and Annette on the Mickey Mouse Club. Mum always says it's a good idea to keep your options open. But I decide right then and there that I'm going to be a journalist in honour of Miss Stephen. Or maybe a teacher. But Mum reckons who'd want to teach snotty-nosed kids like us all day. But I think I'd like it a lot. And I would be all the nice things about Miss Stephen, but not so mean. I wake up early and then remember there's no school and that Miss Stephen is dead. I get a bit sad about her being in purgatory. I don't think she's been good enough to go straight to heaven. Purgatory's almost as bad as hell, but just not for quite as long. Except Sister Dominic says it may as well be because it's so terrible that 1 second feels like 10 years in earth time. You might only have 5 minutes penance to do in purgatory, and it would be like an eternity of horribleness. That's because you see God before you go to purgatory, and he's so brilliant that you can't bear to have to leave heaven even for 5 minutes. But I cheer up a bit because I remember that all us kids said trillions of Hail Marys yesterday, and that takes time off for the souls in purgatory. I still have a bit of a cry, though, and end up back asleep. Then Mum wakes me up. Oh, she's always in a hurry and cranky as anything in the mornings. My dad says it's best to keep out of her way, but somehow I always manage to be in the wrong place. I have to take the boys with me today, but that's all right, because I'll have the gang too. It's good like that, because some of the others have little kids they have to look after too. Mum gives me the money to mind for a treat for us three, but we always share with the others. Petey and Paulie complain about it, but we still do. It's my rule. We go round to the McDermott's. Jamie has to ask if we can go to the Maloney's because it's his mum and he's her favourite because he's the baby of the family. Mrs. McDermott says we have to be back by 1 o'clock and that us big kids have to look after the little kids or she'll murder us. She always says that. Then we go to the Maloney's, then the Parters, then past the McMahons. Usually there's 5 of them and that makes the gang 12. But today, no one's outside. I'm the one who has to knock on the door because I'm Geraldine's friend. But Mr. McMahon says the kids can't come out to play because Geraldine's still too upset. I want to ask her lots of questions, but that's not going to happen today. And anyway, Garen Darby's the one I really want to talk to. Garen's gang usually hangs around the old tip. I don't want to tell the others I'm looking for him. So I say we should just go to the old tip just to muck around. All the little kids start whinging that it's too far, but the others agree with me, especially after I tell them you can sometimes find things and sell them. Petey says we never made any money the last time we did this, but I tell the others we've got some money, even if we don't find anything valuable, but I won't share it unless they come to the tip first. We're really close to the tip in the bush, between it and the back of the houses, when we hear them. They're not really Garen Darby's gang. He's too much of a durbrain to be the leader, even of that bunch of spazzos. It's really Eddie Zabinski's gang, and Garen's just his second in command. Eddie Zabinski's fat and stupid, and he takes up way too much of the seat when you have to sit next to him in class. He also picks his nose and chews it and looks like he really likes it. Yuck. We all hit the dirt, even the little kids. They're good like that. They know what they have to do. But they're not much good in a fight, though. We crawl up to the edge of the tip where we can see them, but they can't see us. They're all down there, about 8 of them. There's 7 of us, but we're a better gang. We're smarter and stronger and faster and braver, like Magellan and Columbus and Vasco da Gama, who we just finished reading about in social studies. I did a project on Vasco da Gama. It was really great, with a map of the world showing where he went. I shaded in all around the continents and islands, with green on the land side and blue for the sea. We're doing Australian Explorers next term. We just watch Eddie's gang for a while because we haven't really got a plan. They're our enemies. There are some other gangs that we play with sometimes, but not this one. We hate them and they hate us. Well, it's getting boring just watching them mucking about. My plan is to get Garen Darby by himself and knock a few answers out of him. They've got something that they're poking at. They're all round it, so it's hard to see. We decide we'll chase them off and take over the tip. Me and Leo decide it together, and the others agree because we're the leaders. "Glory to the valiant," Leo says. But he didn't make it up by himself. I bet he just read it in a book. We jump up and run right at them, screaming and yelling, and the mental defectives just run off. I don't take my eyes off Garen Darby the whole way down, except to look at what it is they've been poking around. It's a cat with white and orange fur. It's dead for sure. There's no blood, but it looks sort of squashed, and it's just staring into the distance. I really hate Garen Darby now. That cat did nothing to him, but he killed it, just like he killed Miss Stephen. It makes me run faster, and somehow I just seem to be able to tell where he's going, even though he's dodging around trying to get away. I catch up to him and push him to the ground. I'm on top of him straight away. That's the best thing to do, getting close, except if they've got a knife. My dad taught me that. After I got beaten in a fight, and I haven't been beaten since. Garen Darby hasn't got a knife, and I'm on top and in close. I pull his hair as hard as I can and push down on his chest with one knee and his neck with the other. That stops him wriggling around, but he's bucking up and down with his legs like a crazy horse. "You're a bloody bugger bastard, Garen. I know what you do," I say. He pushes my knee off his neck, but I still got hold of his hair, so I pull it harder till it feels like it's coming out. I can tell he's trying hard not to yell out. "What? Well, I didn't do anything." "You did. I saw you," I added, even though I hadn't exactly seen him do it. I'd just seen him leaving the building. He starts looking round all crazy, trying to see if anyone is close. Then he gets really strong and rolls over, and now he's holding me down. "I never done it," he says with his face shoved right up against mine. "If you ever say I done it, I'll kill your mum," he says, and he really means it. I pinch him as hard as I can on the top of his arm. He punches my head. It stings like mad, but I'm not going to cry. And somehow he wriggles away, but that's because I'm not really trying. I won because he admitted it. That's the important thing. He did it. He said so. Anyway, he wouldn't have said he'd kill my mum if he wasn't guilty. Then I realise I've got a huge clump of his hair in my fist. I hold it up above my head like this bloke I saw on telly once who'd just won a trophy in a car race. Then everyone gets the same idea at once and we get dry grass and sticks and we make a fire. Leo's always got matches. In fact, he's always got just what you want when you need it. I put Garen Darby's hair on the top like a sacrifice. But it really stinks. And anyway, we've got to be back at the McDermott's for lunch, so we kick the fire out. I say we should bury the cat, but a shovel's one thing Leo doesn't have, so we just put some sheets of old tin over it. Then we all say an Our Father for its soul. I'm really happy all the way back to the McDermott's. I know I've got the evidence now, and I start thinking about how happy Dad'll be. We have sandwiches for lunch out the back under the apricot tree. Mrs. McDermott doesn't mind that there's some extra kids there for lunch. She's good like that. And so are the other mums. They reckon that if everyone takes a turn feeding the kids, then it all evens up in the end. But Julianne's mum, Mrs. Sinclair, is the very opposite. She, who won't even give you a dry sayo biscuit. But she's stuck up. At least that's what Mum and Mrs. McDermott say. There's only two kids in their family, so it's not like they couldn't afford a few crumbs, so they're probably selfish too. Once Dad said they didn't do it anymore, and that's why Mrs. Sinclair is so sour. Mum said, "Not in front of the children, Mike." And then they both burst out laughing and wouldn't explain anything when I asked what was so funny. I don't play with Julianne much anyway. It's lovely under the trees eating lunch, but then I start thinking about what Garen Darby said about how he'd kill Mum if I told anyone. I try to think that Dad will get him and put him in jail before he can do anything, but then I think that maybe he'll find out that I've blabbed before Dad arrests him, and he'll get to Mum before Dad or some other copper gets to him. Mum's got a lot of sharp scissors in the salon, and maybe he'll get them and stab her. Everyone's asking about going to the shops, but I'm too worried about what I should do. I give the money to Leah because I need to see the only person who I can trust to help me work out what to do, and that's Sister Immaculata. She's not like the other nuns. She doesn't teach anyone for a start, so I've got her all to myself. Well, that's what she always says when I go to visit her. She's the kitchen nun. She does the cooking for all the nuns in the convent, and she's very good at it. I know, because she gives me things to eat like biscuits and cake when it's my turn to take the milk to the convent just before play lunch. She's Irish, and she's younger than the other nuns. I feel sorry for her being with all those wrinkly, growly old nuns. Her skin doesn't bulge out of her veil like theirs does. But she always says she's happy with God and all that religious stuff when I ask her about why she's a nun. And she's always happy to see me because I tell everything about whatever's happening at school. "Here's Fiona," she always says. "Come in and tell me what's happening in your world today. Everybody behaving." Sister Immaculata is in the garden, pegging out the rows of milk bottle tops on string that we made in craft. They're for keeping the birds away, but I think they look pretty enough just to be a decoration. I tell her everything I know about why Garen did it. Then I tell her how I made him tell me and what he said about killing Mum and how I don't know what to do. She sits down on the front steps and pats the spot next to her. She looks really sad, like she's going to cry. So I go and I sit down and hold her hand. "Fiona," she says, "I love all you children dearly, especially you. You're my extra special friend, but I'm not going to stand by and watch you being hurt by this terrible thing. I'd like you to do something very important for me. I'd like you to go home, and when your father gets there, ask him to come and see me. And I don't want you to worry. Garen didn't kill Miss Stephen, and he won't kill your mother." "Yes, sister," I say. I think she's wrong about Garen, but somehow she makes me feel safe again, like I know nothing terrible's going to happen. I don't get straight up, I like it here. And besides, if I wait a bit, she might think about giving me a biscuit. She doesn't, though. But she bends right over and gives me a kiss and a hug. So I'm all covered by her black sleeves and her flower smell. Then I do exactly as she says. Dad comes home a long time after seeing Sister Immaculata. I'm not asleep. I've been saying a novena to stay awake and I'm almost at the end. I hear him and Mum in the lounge room. I get up and go to the door. I'm not eavesdropping. I'm on my way to the toilet. Dad's talking. She loved her Betty. They were lesbians. They must have had a fight or something, but she won't talk about it. She told me Fiona's pegged Garen Darby for it. She reckons Fee told her he'd admitted it to her and threatened to kill you if she told anyone. The little bastard's already tough as guts. He's sure to have done something that he doesn't want pinned on him. Oh, poor little Fee. She must have been shit scared for you, love. Jeez, I feel sorry for the nun, though, even if she did do it. She's at the station now, but we won't be objecting to bail. She'll probably be out by tomorrow, and the nuns will look after her till the trial. Christ. The papers will have a field day. We're trying to keep it quiet, but they'll be onto it by tomorrow. I can't see Mum, but I can hear her start crying, and that makes me cry too. Dad's saying that Sister Immaculata did it, and he never gets anything wrong. Never, ever. But I don't believe it. I think she's only saying it to protect Garen. I start getting a bit noisy. I can't help it. Dad hears me and comes out. He picks me up and carries me into the lounge. Mum puts her arms out and we all sit together on the couch. How much did you hear, love? Mum asks. I tell them. Fiona, sometimes things happen that you can't understand or explain, Dad says. People do things, then they're very, very sorry that they have. Garen did it, Dad, I say. He had a motive. Sister Immaculata didn't have one. You told me that's the most important thing you need to solve a crime. Dad looks at Mum, sort of funny. You explain it, love, he says. Mum looks a bit stumped. She takes her time. Then she says that Sister Immaculata loved Miss Stephen in a special way, like Dad loves Mum. They were in love and that's why she killed her. I don't understand. Can't Mum see that nuns are supposed to love everyone like they're their own family? Garen didn't do it, V, Dad says. Miss Stephen was still alive when you saw Garen and Sister Immaculata in the corridor. I don't think Sister Immaculata meant to kill Miss Stephen. It just happened. She lost her temper or something. Perhaps we'll never know. It's hard. And I know you love Sister a lot and she loves you. I know I don't have to tell you this, but you're not to repeat what you've heard tonight. Tomorrow I'm going to school and I'll tell the other kids, but not as much as you know. You have to promise me that you'll keep what you heard tonight to yourself. He knows that he can trust me not to blab, but I promise anyway. I go back to my room and look up lesbian in my junior pocket Oxford dictionary. There's no such word. And anyway, if Sister Immaculata loved Miss Stephen so much, why did she kill her? She loves me, but she didn't kill me. I decide I want to be a nun and a detective at the same time, in honour of Sister Immaculata. She'll like that. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creative.